Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
He seems so excited. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, Chicago, and welcome me back to 2006. Gosh, what happened last week in Chicago? We will never know. But here's what I want to remind you of, wherever you live, however you hear this broadcast. I am so very loving, group hug type loving, of every single affiliated radio station that carries this broadcast on the radio, where it belongs. But still, if one week I suddenly start talking about five-year-old stuff, it's not me. I didn't just say, oh, screw it. I'm not doing a show this week. Throw on a four-year-old tape. I'll see you next week. It's not me. So you can listen to the end of the show. You make note of where else you can hear it, and then come back to your regular station the following week, just like I did. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to confront maybe the, if not the greatest irony, at least the most probably emotionally disturbing irony in modern American life, think about this. While poor people in this country, let's say, the people who had to evacuate because of Katrina and or the flood, have to scrape together the necessities of life. If they could only put together enough money to get to Sundance at Park City, Utah this week, and to convince people that they belong there, they would have found a cornucopia of free stuff being shoved onto them. Swag. It was the legal tender of Sundance. I was up there for a day to talk about New Orleans to a panel. And during that time, I was offered free sneakers. Yeah, people evacuated from New Orleans wouldn't need those. But no, we do. We, the affluent who were inhabiting Sundance for the week, and I was, I guess, middle, I don't know where I was on the great affluence ladder, but anyway, I didn't need them. Those free electronics from Philips, whatever I needed, I didn't need them. Even the highly oxygenated water that had been molecularly re-engineered in Oregon. I'm serious. People were pressing this on me and a friend. It's totally new kind of water. I said, well, is it spring water? Is it? Oh, no, it's molecularly re-engineered, which I understood to mean tap water. But so eager were they to press free bottles of this water into the palms of my friend and I that having taken some of the water, we were then greeted to the spectacle of, and I can't remember his name, but the guy who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, he suddenly shows up and says, I'm endorsing this water. So now, you know, more reason to crave it. And 10 minutes down the line, I'm walking around with this unopened bottle of this. And they keep saying, it's about hydration, as if we've never heard the word before. Oh, I get it. Okay, so you drink water for what? Oh, hydration. No, it's molecularly re-engineered. So about 10 minutes later, walking around with an unopened bottle of the water still tucked under my arm, and a woman comes up to me, woman who looks like basically like Sally Kirkland's sister, and says, do you need more water? No, send it to the evacuees. Send all my swag to the evacuees, won't you? So if you're poor and you need giveaways, you're a dependent and a parasite. If you're rich and you want free stuff, welcome. Come on right on in. The swag's for you. Hello, welcome to the show.
She's one of those girls who seems to come in the spring.
start looking around and you forget everything you had ready to say. And I saw her today. Yeah. A younger girl keeps rolling across my mind. No matter how much I try, I can't seem to leave a memory behind. I remember her eyes, soft, dark, and brown. Said she'd never been in trouble, even in town. A younger girl keeps rolling across my mind. No matter how much I try, I can't seem to leave a memory behind. Girl keeps rolling across my mind. And should I hang around, acting like a brother? In a few more years, they'd call us right for each other. And why? If I wait, I'll just die. Yeah. A younger girl keeps rolling across my mind. No matter how much I try, I can't seem to leave a memory behind. I remember her eyes, soft, dark, and brown. Said she'd never been in trouble, even in town. A younger girl keeps rolling across my mind. She's one of those girls who seems to come in the spring.
Not a game.
sending coded messages around the world. This is Le Show from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer with the latest edition thereof. Ladies and gentlemen, in speech after speech, President Bush claims that if the National Security Agency could have wiretapped two Al-Qaeda operatives living in San Diego, the 9/11 attacks might never have occurred, says 9/11 Commissioner Bob Kerry to the New York Daily News. It's not true. We knew about these two guys. The CIA lost them. They were identified in late 1999 by the NSA, tracked to Malaysia and Thailand, where they were lost by the CIA. The CIA learned in March 2000 that one of them flew to Los Angeles, but kept it secret. The problem was the CIA and FBI not communicating and not picking them up, said Thomas Kane, the co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission. Which suggests, ladies and gentlemen, the real problem with the NSA warrantless eavesdropping, the legalistic among us, including the Democrats, are saying, well, you should get a warrant, and it's against the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment and all that. And it's, don't get me wrong, I love the Fourth Amendment. And the FISA court is maybe my favorite court after the tax court. But the point here is, let's get serious. The problem, as the 9/11 Commission pointed out, as this story from the New York Daily News points out, is it's not about we need more dots. We need more connecting. We had the dots. We just didn't connect them. The NSA spying operation is just to collect a million more dots for somebody to try to connect. We still haven't figured out how to do the connecting right. That would be, it seems to me, the cogent, that is to say, non-Democratic Party version of the argument to make. That's not a knock on the fine Democratic Party spokespeople, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, first from governmentexec.com, kind of a trade magazine for governmentexecs.com. Ex-NSA official seeks avenue for sharing new allegations. Why, it's connected to what we were just talking about, so why wouldn't I read it for you? Huh? For more than 18 years, Russ Tice worked on some of the most secretive, covert intelligence programs operated by the U.S. government. Now the 43-year-old former intelligence officer says he wants to, quote, spill his guts to Congress about, quote, probable unlawful and unconstitutional acts he believes occurred when he worked for the National Security Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency. Quote, I've dealt with these programs, and they're so deep and they're so black. Ew, they have no oversight, unquote, said Tice, who was fired from NSA last year. I'm not wanting to out these programs. The problem is there's just very little adult supervision, if any. That's why the abuses have happened, unquote. Tice sent a letter last month to the chairman of the Senate and House Intelligence Committee saying he wants to report suspected illegal activity. High-level director of the NSA, deputy chief of staff, U.S. Secretary of Defense. Tice said he did not work on the now famous warrantless eavesdropping program at the NSA, but that his allegations are equally explosive. Quote, that was Hiroshima, and this is Nagasaki. I want to talk about Nagasaki, which nobody's heard about yet, unquote. He declined to discuss any details of his allegations, saying that doing so would disclose classified information and put him at risk of going to jail. He wants to meet in a classified setting with congressmen or their staff. Quote, if it's done, it's all going to be done in a closed session. It's all going to be classified. I'm doing everything I can to make sure you never know what these programs are, unquote. Tice's request, however, has run up against bureaucracy because he worked on what are known as special access programs. Congressional staff members are not sure who can meet with him. Quote, what it really comes down to is a matter of jurisdiction, says an aide to Democrat Jane Harman of the House Intelligence Committee. Wendy Morigi, spokeswoman for Senator Jay Rockefeller of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says it does not appear the Intelligence Committee has jurisdiction. Matters are under the jurisdiction of the Armed Services Committee, she says. The House Armed Services Committee, however, has yet to receive any request to hear from Tice. To my knowledge, says a spokesman for the House Armed Services Committee, the Intelligence Committee has not forwarded that request over to us. Complicating matters further, NSA sent Tice a letter earlier this month telling him he has to notify the Defense Department, Inspector General, or NSA of his complaint and of the information he intends to share with Congress. The letter added Tice has to receive direction on how to proceed from the Secretary of Defense or NSA director, two of the people he alleges were involved in illegal or unconstitutional activity. Tice says he does not intend to comply with NSA's order. The thing is, he says, they're freaking out now because they don't want me to say anything. Unquote. It's not the first time Tice has acted as a whistleblower. In April 2001, while working at the Defense Intelligence Agency, he alleged that an Asian-American female co-worker might have been a spy for the Chinese government. He knew the woman and reported that she was allegedly living beyond her means. He raised the allegation again in 2003 after being transferred to the NSA, after which he was ordered to undergo psychological evaluations. He was diagnosed by NSA psychologists as being paranoid, and the NSA revoked his security clearance. Without that clearance, of course, he was fired last May. Tice claimed the order to undergo psychological evaluation and the subsequent revocation of his security clearance were retaliation for his alleging that his co-worker was a spy. He also said he saw an independent psychologist who found no evidence that he was paranoid. The NSA Inspector General and the Department of Defense Inspector General investigated Tice's claim that he was retaliated against. Quote, the record in the case indicates by clear and convincing evidence that the personnel actions against Mr. Tice would have occurred regardless of the 2001 disclosure. Unquote. The Inspectors General did conclude that he made a protected disclosure in 2001, but they didn't investigate whether the co-worker was the spy. From other trades, somewhat less ambiguous and disturbing, NFL to end erectile dysfunction drug sponsorship deals in Super Bowl. From Ad Age, the National Football League plans to cut its ties with erectile dysfunction drug ads, highlighting growing concerns about increasingly risque creative in the category and leaving manufacturers with a dearth of major sports marketing platforms for their brands. The league has decided not to renew its $18 million sponsorship agreement with Levitra and will in fact distance itself from ED ads altogether, says NFL's spokesman Brian McCarthy. Quote, we do not have plans to secure a sponsor in this category. The NFL, in particular, seemed a perfect home for the ads. Football is the most popular team sport in the country. But to the dismay of critics, the content of the advertising changed from addressing the issue of impotence to a more sexy, provocative feel. The erectile dysfunction category has been a lightning rod for criticism. ED drug marketers have few remaining sports sponsorship deals. Cialis sponsors a golf tournament on the PGA Tour. Viagra is a partner in Major League Baseball, sponsoring the Comeback Player of the Year Awards. Major League Baseball says it's happy with its Viagra sponsorship and hopes it can, their word, expand in the future. Pfizer's Viagra had also been the main sponsor for NASCAR driver Mark Martin since 2000, before ending the sponsorship after the 2005 season. Neither the National Hockey League nor the NBA have ED sponsorships. NFL spokesperson McCarthy stressed the NFL is not shying away from pharmaceutical partners. The league reversed a self-imposed ban on healthcare sponsorship and advertising in 2003, and in fact has opened categories in 7 of the 8 areas it initially identified as acceptable: allergies, cholesterol reducers, dermatology, diabetes, gastrointestinal, hair renewal and growth, and prostate medication. The 8th was ED. Those are good categories. Have to see if I have any involvement in any of those. I might want to become a partner with the National Football League, a decision I'm going to have to make because, ladies and gentlemen, I read the trades for you. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Often duplicated, never duplicated. Dateline, Richmond, Virginia. Virginia lawmaker's handgun accidentally discharged in his Capitol Square office this week as he tried to unload it, sending a bullet zinging across the room before it was stopped by a bulletproof vest hanging on the door. That absorbed the entire thing, said Delegate, which I guess is a representative, John S. Jack Reed, a 63-year-old Republican who was both shaken and embarrassed by the incident. Shaken but not stirred, apparently. He later took the rare step of apologizing to both the Democratic and Republican caucuses before the floor session and then made another apology on the House floor. He said he'd taken the tiny automatic handgun out of the breast pocket of his jacket, removed it from a thin pouch, and was ejecting the ammunition clip from its handle when it discharged. He said it was fortunate that the vest was hanging where it was, because the bullet about a diameter of a pencil could have passed through the door and possibly hit someone outside. Reed received the vest last year as a gag gift from the sheriff of Henrico County, the Richmond suburb where he lives. It's all humorous, isn't it? Dateline Tokyo, a senior U.S. agriculture official, apologized to Japan, but said there was no risk from U.S. beef after Tokyo slapped a new ban on the exports for violating a food safety agreement. J.B. Penn, Undersecretary for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services, said his country has been investigating how a U.S. slaughter firm and a meat packer sent a shipment with spinal columns, which are banned in Japan for fear of mad cow disease. But they taste so... Penn said he apologized to Japanese officials in meetings aimed at lifting the new ban imposed last week. He told them the incident was an isolated mistake by a firm inexperienced in international commerce. They just slapped the spinal columns in, not knowing, I guess. Probably getting out of your automobile and walking into the store to buy beef has a higher probability that you will be hit by an automobile than it does from the harm coming to you by eating beef, Penn told reporters. Of course, the more spinal column people consume, the worse driving they'll do. I'm just guessing at that. Dateline London rocker John Bon Jovi has apologized to Madonna for wrongly accusing her of exploiting her children by displaying them at movie premieres. According to a website, Bon Jovi criticized Madonna for allowing her children to attend public events and advised her to protect them from media intrusion. But he soon realized he made a mistake after Madonna hit back, saying her children had not attended a single film opening. He said, "I put my foot in my mouth recently with a comment about Madonna. Let me apologize because I don't know the woman." But he said he continues to dislike publicity-hungry celebrities. John Bon Jovi dislikes publicity-hungry celebrities, ladies and gentlemen, and is about to go on Larry King to denounce them. Dateline Washington satellite television provider DirecTV apologized this week for inconsistent responses to southern Vermont customers trying to schedule installation of a second dish that can receive newly available local programming. DirecTV began transmitting programming of 5 Burlington television stations Friday, but the 17,000 customers in nearby counties must have another satellite dish installed before they're able to view the channels. Several customers told a local newspaper their calls to schedule an installation with DirecTV were met with confusion from company employees. "I apologize if that's the case," says Susan Ide, DirecTV's vice president of government affairs. "We'll be ready to schedule appointments on Monday. Can you be home between Monday and next year?" she added. DirecTV partially owned? No, totally owned by Rupert Murdoch. Good work, Roop. London's Metropolitan Police Commissioner this week provoked a polarized reaction to his claim that the media were institutionally racist, with supporters rushing to his defense despite widespread criticism over his use of a couple of child murders, the Soham murders, to illustrate the point. Sir Ian Blair apologized for using the murders of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman to demonstrate his contention, but stood by his original point. Quote, "I obviously have to unreservedly apologize to anyone connected to the murders, especially the parents of the girls, for reigniting the story. It was not intended to diminish the significance of the dreadful crime." At a meeting of the Metropolitan Police Authority, he said that almost nobody could understand why the disappearance of the girls in August 2002 dominated the news headlines and became the biggest story in Britain. The comment was part of a broader attack on the media for routinely giving extensive coverage to the murder of white middle-class victims, while often relegating those from ethnic minorities to a paragraph on page 97. Man, that sounds so weird. Not like what we do here. Deadline, Pennsylvania. Republican gubernatorial candidate Bill Scranton fired his campaign manager and apologized for a racially charged remark the manager made about former Steelers star Lynn Swann, who is Scranton's rival for the Republican nomination. On a televised call-in show Wednesday night, James Self said, quote, the rich white guy in this campaign is Lynn Swann, unquote. Scranton, in a statement released from his campaign, said he was trying to reach Swann to apologize. Quote, I want to apologize to Lynn Swann, his family, supporters, and campaign. Scranton said he expressed, quote, deep personal regret and anger, unquote, and said Self's comment in no way whatsoever reflects my views or those of my campaign, unquote. Swann is seeking to become Pennsylvania's first black governor. Scranton comes from a wealthy family and is white. Aside from that, everything's fine. Atlantic City Mayor Tom Basford has apologized for a comment he made last week that he admitted may have been offensive to the township's non-Christian residents. In an interview with the press of Atlantic City, Basford said he wants to regularly invite local clergy to pray at council meetings because, quote, we're a Christian society and it's a good way to start off a meeting with prayers. Basford also said he plans to ask clergy from all faiths to lead prayers and he wants the tradition to be inclusive of people with various backgrounds. At this week's council meeting, Basford apologized publicly for the apparent mixed message, saying he had not chosen his words carefully. He blamed his relative inexperience less than a month as mayor, saying, quote, I'm new at this. Ask Ray Nagin for guidance, sir. Florida Republican Party officials on Saturday called security to elect reporters listening to Governor Jeb Bush speak to several hundred party activists in Tallahassee. Reporters have been trying to listen through an open door. Five hotel security staffers and a sheriff's deputy led reporters away from where they could hear the governor in the middle of a speech, according to a report by the St. Petersburg Times. I apologize for that if I'm indirectly responsible, which I'm not, Bush said. I would have loved to have you in there. I wouldn't have said anything different if you were there. That's a good apology. Apologize if I was indirectly responsible, but I'm not. Ariel Sharon's son has apologized for illicitly funding his father's 1999 run to head the Likud party. I made mistakes, serious mistakes, and I'm sorry for it, Omri Sharon told magistrate court this Wednesday in closing arguments before he sentenced as part of a plea bargain. He has pleaded guilty to fraud and bribery in connection with the Likud primary in 1999. He illegally solicited foreign funding without his father's knowledge. That would be easy now, ladies and gentlemen. Mayor Don Wright of Gallatin, Tennessee, has apologized to the city council for asking a female employee at City Hall if she had implants. And Oprah Winfrey has apologized to her viewers for calling CNN's Larry King 2 weeks ago and lending her support to James Frey, author of A Million Little Pieces. I regret that phone call, she said. I made a mistake. I left the impression that the truth does not matter, and I'm deeply sorry about that. That is not what I believe. I called in because I love the message of his book. At the time, every day, I was reading email after email from people who were inspired by his story, and I have to say I allowed that to cloud my judgment. To everyone who has challenged my position, you are absolutely right. This was on Oprah's show Thursday, where she had James Frey, author of the book, in for an hour of... Well, she took him to the woodshed, is what she did, over his memoir, which turned out to be mainly fictional. But that's not the end of that story.
I'm Dr. Phil, and all this week I've got the battle royale of afternoon television. My mentor versus her tormentor. And all that stands between them is me. Now, Oprah, why are you so angry at James for lying to you?
I don't like being lied to. I feel I've earned the position where I shouldn't be lied to.
But you knew that James was a junkie.
No, I wasn't a junkie. I was an addict. I'm a junkie in my next book.
Oprah Winfrey and James Frey together again for the next to last time. All this week on Dr. Phil, the
Now, James.
Yes.
There are three things you can do to communicate more effectively with Oprah.
I'm listening.
Well, good, because one is to listen more. Mm-hmm. Two is to stop talking with that whiny lisp.
I'm working on it.
But that's what attracted me to him in the first place. This bad boy with this very strong feminine side.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm hearing. These people need each other. It's our big lead up to Sweets. Oprah and James Week on Dr. Phil all this week. Because who's going to stop us?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from the digital wonderland. The date for the official switch from analog TV to a completely digital system has been pushed back from 2006 to 2009. In the meantime, consumers are snatching up HD TV sets at a never-before-seen pace as prices for large, flat, and stunning-looking TVs drop. Everything seems perfect. HD TV is driving people into retailers to buy their first new televisions in years. But all is not perfect in the booming world of HD TV. Published reports say there are up to 7 million early HD TV sets that completely lack digital video inputs, thus cannot possibly have the soon-to-be all-important HDCP copy protection that movie studios are demanding before they release HD content. What's a consumer to do when his digital video input will not be able to make a HDCP handshake with components like the new DVD or Blu-ray player or the new versions of digital video recorders equipped for HD? The handful of obscure products that can solve the problem are disappearing thanks to pressure from chip makers and technology licensees who don't want to see copy protection circumvented. Up until recently, digital video cables have been less than reliable over runs that extend more than 2 or 3 meters. I guess that's a few feet. Much like a cell phone, digital connections simply cut out when they're lost. This is exactly the reason why nearly all installations of HD TV receivers and digital video recorders use the analog output of the HD receiver and connect to a set or projector via analog cables. They've been more reliable. By 2009, the mandate is you must have your set connected via a digital video format. But what do you do if you're still hooked up with analog cables? Hollywood and Silicon Valley suggest that you will have all new gear by then. Most people keep their TVs longer than just a few years. For the 7 million TV sets with non-HDCP connections, you might have a real problem on your hands depending on your situation. There are currently powerful lobby groups fighting for consumers against the current copy protection, which would protect those 7 million. Too confusing? In a deal reached this week after tense negotiations, the 8-company consortium behind the Advanced Access Content System, created for use by high-def formats in DVD to prevent copying, have agreed to require hardware makers to bar some high-definition signals from being sent to players, from players to displays over analog connections. Instead, the affected analog signal must be down-converted to look like the crappy old DVDs we have now. So, why would you want to upgrade? Again, tell me that. The players will be required to recognize and respond to a digital flag called an image constraint token inserted into the movie data. The studios are divided over whether to require such down conversion and are likely to follow separate policies. This is from DVDexclusive.com. Hardware makers had generally resisted the requirement, but under the new deal, image constraint token recognition will be included in the license that all device makers and playback software vendors will have to sign. Estimates differ on how many consumers will be affected, but rest assured that it's probably you. especially if you're an early adopter. What have I told you about being an early adopter? Have I ever told you anything about being an early adopter? Here's what I tell you. Don't. News from the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to digitally copyright it. Ladies and gentlemen, the first official history of the $25 billion American reconstruction effort in Iraq depicts a program hobbled from the outset by gross understaffing, a lack of technical expertise, bureaucratic infighting, secrecy, and constantly increasing security costs, according to a preliminary draft. Of course, that's going to be rewritten. Don't worry about that. The document, which begins with the secret pre-war planning for reconstruction, and touches on nearly every phase of the program through last year, was assembled by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction and was debated last month in a closed-door meeting by roughly two dozen experts from outside the office. A draft was made available to the New York Times. Seemingly odd decisions on dividing the responsibility for various sectors of the reconstruction crop up repeatedly in the document. At one point, a planning team made the decision to put all reconstruction activities in Iraq under the Army Corps of Engineers, except anything to do with water, which would go to the Navy. I'm just reading them. I'm not writing them. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you ever wonder what's different between Australia and the United States, aside from the hemisphere, because, you know, they're in Iraq too, and they got racial problems, but here you go right here. This would really spotlight the difference. Burning the Australian flag is offensive, but should not be made a criminal offense, Conservative Prime Minister John Howard said this week. He said the burning of the Australian flag by Aboriginal protesters in Brisbane this week was offensive, but not indicative of mainstream Indigenous opinion. It was offensive. I don't think it represents mainstream Aboriginal opinion. But he said it should not be made a criminal offense because it was an expression of political belief. Much as I despise what they did, I do not believe it should be a criminal offense. I see that kind of thing as just expression, however offensive to the majority of the Australian community, an expression of political opinion. I do not think we achieve anything by making it a criminal offense. We only turn Yahoo behavior into martyrdom. Unquote, he said, would not engender greater respect for the Australian flag, which was already greatly respected by the Australian people. So that would be the difference right there, ladies and gentlemen. The top U.S. general in Iraq acknowledged this week that American forces are stretched, but said troop withdrawals will be dictated by strategy and not the strain faced by soldiers. General George Casey's remarks contrasted sharply with statements made on Wednesday by U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, who disputed findings of an unreleased study conducted for the Pentagon that said the Army is overextended because of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. President Bush shrugged off the report on Thursday. But Casey said the forces are stretched. And I don't think there's any question of that. I'd shrug that off. The United States will not complete hundreds of basic water and electricity projects planned after the 2003 invasion of Iraq because more than $3 billion was shifted to meet unanticipated security needs. Iraqis routinely describe the lack of basic services such as clean water and a steady supply of electricity as perhaps the biggest problem facing the country. They rank it ahead of, often, insecurity and persistent violence. But with slightly less than 20% of the U.S. government's $18 billion reconstruction budget allocated and the Bush administration not seeking any more funds, some of the original goals will not be fully achieved in some sectors. That comes in the audit by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction. The United States reconstruction efforts have shown tangible results, says the Inspector General Stuart Bowen. However, the significant funding change means that many of the originally planned projects will not be completed. As much as 60% of all projects aimed at improving the water supply, including work on sewer systems and drinking water, will remain unfinished. More than 125 of a planned 425 electricity projects will be left unfinished, a steep reduction in the goal for increasing Iraq's generating capacity. You see. News of justice on the Iraqi war. A military jury in Colorado issued a reprimand this week to an Army interrogator who was convicted of negligent homicide. That's what you get for negligent homicide in Iraq, a reprimand. He was using an aggressive technique on an Iraqi general who died during questioning. Jurors decided not to impose any prison sentence for what originally was charged as a murder. The lenient sentence for Chief Warrant Officer Louis Welschofer implies the jurors thought the interrogator should not face serious punishment in connection with the death of Major General Abed Hamad Mawoush, a high-ranking Saddam loyalist who is believed to have engineered insurgent attacks in northern Iraq. After Mawoush's capture, Welschofer shoved him into a sleeping bag, wrapped him in a cord, straddled him in a last-ditch effort to get him to talk. The general stopped breathing during the session. That's worthy of a reprimand. Meanwhile, of course, the non-officer folks at Abu Ghraib are serving 10 years. Is that correct? That's the sincerest form of a reprimand. And
I've ordered every cabinet secretary to participate in a comprehensive review of the government response to the hurricane. This government will learn the lessons of Hurricane Katrina. We're going to review every action and make necessary changes so that we are better prepared for any challenge of nature or act of evil men that could threaten our people.
That was President Bush in Jackson Square, New Orleans, in September, mid-September of last year. It's been 5 months, ladies and gentlemen. Where is that review? Where are the lessons learned? They might be here. In this weekend's New York Times, the White House was beset by the fog of war in the crucial days immediately after Hurricane Katrina, leaving much of the federal government unable to respond properly to the unfolding catastrophe. That's according to House investigators after getting the most detailed briefing yet on how President Bush's staff had handled the crisis. This is not the lessons learned review. This is just a briefing for the House. The closed-door briefing, attended mostly by committee aides, was provided by Bush's deputy domestic security advisor, Kenneth Rapuanu, who was the senior official in charge of managing storm events at the White House. Don't blame Mike Brown. It's Kenneth Rapuanu. Rapuanu acknowledged that he left the White House about 10 o'clock in the evening on Monday, August 29th, on the night the storm hit. Some 2 hours later, the White House received a report indicating that a major levee had been breached. But Rapuanu said that before he left that night, the White House received a separate report from the Army Corps of Engineers saying its evaluation of the levees was still underway. Don't let them do anything regarding water. Here's the money quote. Mr. Rapuano, according to the staff members present, emphasized that it was not clear that the White House would have done anything differently had it learned Monday night that the levees had been breached. If I'd known then what I'd known now, I would have done the same thing. So it didn't make any difference which guy we elected last year. They both take that same position. And Deadline Washington, a group of current and former intelligence officers are meeting this weekend in Springfield, Virginia, to discuss ethical spying, given the current debates over interrogation techniques bordering on torture and the alleged skewing of pre-war intelligence. The 200 attendees hope to begin hammering out a code of ethics for spies and form an international association to study the subject. Conference attendees describe intelligence ethics as an emerging field and call for the gathering, not sponsored by any government agency, to be the first of its kind. The topics include spiritual crises and the perfidy of espionage. Organizers said conferees would ponder such timely issues as how many civilian deaths can be justified in a CIA Predator missile strike to kill a terrorist. Yeah, they need ethical guidance, but they need something more.
From McLean, Virginia, the human intelligence capital of the world, Court TV presents the first annual Spooky Awards.
Hi, I'm former Presidential Security Advisor Richard Clark, and I'm hosting this exciting event. That's right, an award show hosted by the other Dick Clark.
For the first time ever that we know about, the national intelligence community takes a night out from snooping around the world to pay tribute to itself and everyone who is no one is there.
Oh, there's former CIA Director Robert Gates, and he's wearing a dark suit. Oh, God, another one. I think I'm going to throw up all over Melissa.
And the Spooky Award for the best foreign covert operation goes to the killing of the son-in-law of Osama bin Laden's right-hand man in Waziristan.
This is the award show that counts, because it's voted on by the people who know best.
I'd explain the rules, but not even the accounting firm of PricewaterhouseCoopers knows who's in the Academy.
I mean, what other award show can make your intelligence level go up?
The first annual Spooky Awards. Just try to find out when it's on.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Radio, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.4 and 5 megahertz, around the world via your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/the show. Available at channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it would be just like me writing this down one of these days instead of having to remember it. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeaus to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. I'm going to take my free Sundance swag and get out of here. See you next week. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Anybody want shoes?